The Troubles have been rewritten to shift responsibility away from those who killed. So claims the writer and journalist Malachy O'Doherty. Malachy says some of the words used to describe the Troubles make him feel like slapping people. He says it suggested we're all to blame for what happened, that we're all part of the problem and needed to find love and peace in our hearts. The point of all of this sermonising, he says, is to absolve those who did the actual killing and to make all of us responsible for what they did. What do you think about that? Is he right or has he got it completely wrong? 0845 9555 678 on the phones, 81771 on text messages, or tweet me at William Crawley, all one word. Malachy is in the studio with us this morning. Also here, Danny Morrison, former publicity director for Sinn Féin and a former member of the IRA. We're both going to take this up with you, our audience, and get your response. You can respond to them directly and engage in conversation with them. Malachy, why did you feel so strongly about this and write this in the Telegraph?
Well, why did I do it at that time? I did it simply, this is the substance of a book I wrote 15 years ago. So it's not something new that I'm saying, you know.
But things have changed in 15 years.
Well, things have changed in 15 years. I suppose what's triggered it off, and I'll not name the person, but I was at this little lecture with one of the familiar peaceniks, and he was giving us the usual stuff about change of heart and about how, the spiritual process of peacemaking. And he did what an awful lot of speakers have done in this, is he drew in the comparison with South Africa. And that took me back to a memory of a night when the Northern Ireland office invited me and a couple of journalists to have dinner at Crawfordsburn Inn, in fact, with the South African diplomat, who was going to explain to us at the start of our own peace process how peace processing worked. And he told this story about how when one of the delegates coming to a peace conference at a mountainous location was coming in this helicopter, he saw a child of the other, and he would have known by colour, I suppose, in some trouble on the rocks. And he ordered his helicopter to go over there to reach this child. And when they got there, the other delegates were reaching the scene as well. And then they realised that they were both human beings and that this had such an important effect on peacemaking, this discovery of a common humanity. And we're being given this all the time. And you know who these people are. You have had them in Sunday Sequence 1,000 times, who come out with the same line that peace was born in our hearts, you know, that it was a transformation in people, in the whole of society. And the implication of that is that it was the whole population of Northern Ireland that was implicated in the Troubles. And I had rows with David Irvine over this and others. I remember, saying, that the Trouble is an historic legacy. We are all part of it. We are all tainted by the hate, you know. Do you know where I first heard that? I first heard that from the UDA to justify killing random Catholics. And it's now the rationale for peacemaking, to say that we are all implicated in it.
Everybody was a combatant.
Everybody was a... Well, don't get me on that word, But everybody was tainted. Everybody was implicated. There was a sectarian toxin in all our hearts. And because of that, and out of that, the violence was born.
What's your problem with the word combatant?
But there was no combat. There was very little combat. Sticking a bomb under somebody's car and leaving it to go off the following morning is not combat. Combat is an engagement between people who combat, who fight. That's what combat is. I have spoken to people in community groups, in therapy groups, who have told me that the vocabulary with which they personally must deal in their counselling with people who've been involved in paramilitary organisations has changed, and they must now call them former combatants, stroking them, patting them in the head, you nice people, occupy poor thing.
So what should we call people who were engaged in killing?
Well, I don't know. I don't like the word terrorist either, former paramilitaries. What's wrong with calling yourself a paramilitary if that's what you were?
0845 9555 678. Let's get your response to what Malachy's been saying. Danny Morrison is here.
Good morning.
Not impressed by this, are you?
Absolutely not. I have to say, in the article, Malachy talks about, the point of all this sermonising, where he's attacking people, and this is nothing but a sermon, this is nothing but a rant. It's, in fact, it's pretty offensive also, talking about, the piffle, the peace process piffle, makes me want to head out. A lot of people lost their lives in the conflict. I know that's another word that Malachy doesn't like and repudiates in his column, even though it appears in his book, The Trouble with Guns. He uses that term himself. So the fact of the matter is that a lot of people have moved on. I think Malachy is a person who's pretty much stuck in the past. There's a consistency about the material that he writes and regurgitates. So I think he has got it wrong. I don't know anybody. Where does he get it wrong? I don't think he can point out to me a statement by Gerry Adams or Martin McGuinness where they blame everybody in the North for the conflict. That's totally untrue. He in the article, and it's unfortunate perhaps because some of the listeners haven't read it, but you know, he repudiates that there was pogroms, that there was POWs, that there was torture. So I don't know what you call 10,000 people being displaced and about 500 homes being burnt down. Of course there was a pogrom. That's why most people recognise and understand what happened here in August 1969. On POWs, of course there were POWs. They had political status. It was granted by the British government. Reginald Modling used the term, "I'm at war with the IRA," whenever he was Home Secretary. And, of course, when the British government withdrew that POW status, it led to the situation in the H-blocks and the hunger strikes.
So you think he's rewriting history?
He is rewriting history. Because, you see, Malachy is a partisan. The people he mostly, you read the subtext.
Danny Morrison isn't openly partisan.
I don't know, but the point of it is, I don't pretend to be otherwise.
He's willfully partisan.
You do. That's the difference. You dress it all up, you know, and you're out there a lone voice, I have to say.
I am a lone voice. Let me tell you how I interpret the history of the Troubles and how it differs from the Sinn Féin interpretation of the Troubles. And not just Sinn Féin, I mean the Loyalists as well.
You've left out the people who caused the problem. The British government, that's where you
British government caused the problem. It's your analysis of the British government caused the problem.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
That's exactly it. So now we have an argument about the Republican definition of the Troubles. No. Is that what we're here to have, just the same old argument? Look, you can't say the British government...
You've been writing the same articles for 15 years.
And you've been absolving the IRA of everything for 15 years, or for a lot longer. And you've been saying that
I was interviewed on this station 3 weeks ago about my feelings about Bloody Friday. I don't absolve the IRA. Of course the IRA killed people and innocent people.
They caused the trouble too. So we now add to the list of who caused the trouble, the British government, and now the IRA.
Whenever you talk about the truth, it's only one side of the truth that you want. So let's say we're going to have a truth and reconciliation process, and I buy into it, and I say what I did. But let's start at the beginning. So let's find out the names of the RUC men that was covered up by Stormont government who beat Sammy Devaney to death, who killed Francis McCluskey, who shot 9-year-old Patrick Rooney, who beat 61-year-old Patrick Conway to death. So let's begin at the beginning. Know how far you'll get? Nowhere, because they're not prepared to say. And then later on, when you talk about the nature of war, cold communities being attacked, what do you think it was surrounding 10,000 homes in the Lower Falls and gassing it from the air and killing 5 people, including the Polish journalist? We don't know who killed those people.
Lists too. Anderson Street, blown up by the provost and denied for years. Cloddy Bomb, denied for years. You still haven't admitted you did the Cloddy Bomb. The Abercorn. We can do that if you want.
We can do that if you want, Danny. The IRA, we know that the IRA killed people. The IRA,
do we know they did the Cloddy Bomb?
I don't know if they did the
Cloddy
Bomb.
Oh, you don't know about the Cloddy Bomb?
I don't know.
Do you know if they did Anderson Street? 8 people dead, the Anderson Street bomb. Do you know if that was Short Strand?
Yes.
That's okay,
yes.
You're all right with that.
No, what no,
about
I'm
the
not all right with
you're not all right.
No,
they didn't do it or they did do it. It was their bomb. Well, you're throwing lists at me. I can throw them back and we can do that all day or we can have a proper discussion.
The proper discussion is this. You are repudiating people who are building peace and your obsession is one-sided. Your obsession is with Republicans. You cannot move on. You're still fighting the war. You are.
The article isn't actually addressed at Republicans. The article is addressed primarily at an analysis of the conflict, if you like, and what that analysis says is that the Troubles was in the hearts of us all. Where does it say in that article that Danny Morrison subscribes to that?
Make your point.
But the provisionals, the whole of society was not responsible for creating the Troubles. Mm-hmm. But that is the device by which the peace process is created in order to give everybody dignity within the negotiations that followed.
It's a spin.
We get it first in the joint declaration of December 1993 when John Major and Albert Reynolds stood in Downing Street and they issued that document. essentially defining a conflict, which is a legacy of history, as if to say that the whole of us were part of the problem, and that something had to evolve that would change the nature of Northern Ireland society through changing the hearts of people by putting history to the rest. Now, the people who come into this, and these are the ones I'm at most, who compare this with South Africa and identify themselves with Nelson Mandela, are missing the total contrast between the evolution of trouble in Northern Ireland and peacemaking in Northern Ireland and peacemaking in South Africa. South Africa was on the brink of a massive war. It was faced with the inevitability of a revolution, a total transformation of society that would have to happen, and that inevitability created it. And yet we have people who come from South Africa and peace groups who relate to that, who talk about it as if it was a spiritual event. What happened in Northern Ireland was precisely the different thing. What happened in Northern Ireland was that you had violence coming from Loyalists and Republicans and others.
Yeah. You can't say the British, you can't say the
RUC. And the British, and the RUC, and the British Army. Of course I can say it.
Did they commit murder?
Of course they did. Yeah. Of course they did.
You don't write about it.
I've written about Bloody Sunday.
There's a key issue.
The important point to make is what happened was that the trouble, the violent elements within society moved to the position of the majority. When Sinn Féin took the ground of the SDLP, then they could get votes.
And you're saying that a new kind of language evolved to rewrite the past.
A new kind of language evolved to rewrite the past, to make it look as if the Troubles was the burden of the whole of society and the responsibility.
Everybody was
and
implicated.
And everybody was implicated.
Everybody was as bad as everybody else.
Yeah, and where the reality, well, not every as bad, that's an equation that won't hold up. But the reality is that the majority of people never supported the paramilitary organisations, and they only voted for the paramilitary organisations when they moved into the ground of making peace. The IRA and the Sinn Féin and Republicans and Loyalist groups and Unionism and the DUP have not been rewarded for making conflict, they've been rewarded for making peace.
Well, I don't know anybody who blames the entire population for the conflict. You're saying there that the Republicans and the Loyalists had no support, but presumably the RUC and the British Army.
Okay. And just before you go on, we need to make it clear that the DUP obviously deny any involvement in violence.
They wore the red berets.
I don't necessarily subscribe to that.
I know you may take different views, but that's their view. We need to say that's their view. Danny, do you argue, Danny, that everybody in Northern Ireland who lived through the Troubles is in some sense implicated in the conflict?
They were involved in it, but they weren't implicated and they weren't responsible for it. People should accept responsibility for what they did. And the fact of the matter is that, in my opinion, and I speak from experience of growing up in West Belfast, in both in Andersonstown and in the Falls, and in being there and being on marches that were baton charged, I was baton charged by the RUC outside Belfast City Hall for taking part in the People's Democracy protest about an increase in bus fares for pensioners. Similarly, on the 14th and 15th of August 1969, I saw people burnt out of their homes. There was no guns on the Falls Road. The guns came in the form of the RUC and the Beast Specials and mobs that came down and burnt people out of their homes and killed people. Now, if we're talking about the truth, you see, there's no point in obfuscating that aspect of it and only beginning the day that the IRA kills the first soldier, and that's the conflict, and that's the cause of the conflict. So you go back to then, and what preceded that? 50 years of humiliation, second-class citizenship, and the people took it for a long, long time, and it came to a stage where certain people couldn't take it. Now, you can disagree with that decision. You can argue that about the magnitude of the response of the IRA. You can say it was unjustified. You're entitled to say those things. But when you turn around, I mean, you just pluck things out of the hat. You know, the IRA did admit Enniskillen. The IRA did admit it carried out the Le Mans bombing, the Donegal Street bombing, Bloody Friday. So don't try to veil your argument. Veil your argument. Don't be veiling your argument. You know, you're using deceit there. The fact of the matter is that the IRA has been up there, held to account. People have gone to jail. People have been killed. You're caught in a compromising situation near an arms dump. You've been assassinated by the SAS. And to me, my friend Jimmy Quigley was 18 years of age. It's the 40th anniversary of his death this September. Jimmy Quigley had a rifle. And he lived in Divis Flats, and he was tortured going in and out of Divis Flats by the British Army, who were based in Divis Flats but didn't live here, weren't born here. He went out to open fire on them, and an 8-man patrol surrounded him and killed him.
Do you know what the big mistake he made was? you know what the big mistake you made at the start was? The big mistake was to decide that Northern Ireland was unreformable and that you would never contribute to the reformation of it. And that's what you changed your minds on. And you were right to change your minds on it, because there was a massive inertia in Northern Ireland which proved that nobody was going to go along with the agenda to create an Irish Republic.
I'm not shutting you down. We do have time to talk about this. I want to bring some people in who've been calling us. Quite a lot of calls. People want to get involved in the conversation. 0845955678. James is in Newcastle this morning. Good morning, James.
Good morning. I would like to tell Donnie Morrison that Monica O'Doherty is not a lone voice. And a lot of folk that I have spoken to would hold up with his opinions. Just to say that, because, you know, every time you hear somebody saying that some guy's a lone voice, it's ridiculous, you know.
Thank you very much, James. Hugh is in Newton Arts. Good morning, Hugh.
Good morning, sir.
Tell us your experience, Hugh.
Well, I had a brother and two friends who were blew up in Donegal Street. I'm 76. I still cry about that. Now, the ones that done that, I'm sure after they done that, they went into the clubs or that's where they me are. I know it takes two to tango, who says. But I bet after they done that, innocent people, they were in love and drinking this, that, and the other. They've never got nobody for it. Now, Danny Morrison's on there speaking about this, that, and the other. Danny Morrison was just as bad as the rest as Gerry Adams and the second minister.
Hugh, do you want to have a word with Danny and get his response to what you've just been saying?
Please, if you don't mind.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead, Danny.
Well, first of all, I'm very, very sorry that you lost relatives in Donegal Street.
Sorry. I'm 76 and I'm still crying about it.
I can understand that. I lost friends too, and I know.
What did you do? You're on this program here, talking. You were in it. You know your friends, but you not come out with the truth.
Let's give Danny a wee chance to respond to Hugh, and then you can come back to him. Go ahead, Danny.
You see, had the unionist government or the unionist mainstream parties, had the likes of the Good Friday Agreement been signed at Easter 1969, probably not one person here would have lost their lives. But there was a refusal to share power, and I believe that probably the British government and the likes of General Kitson, who felt that this was a good training ground, they could fight a counterinsurgency war here, they could defeat the IRA, and the mainstream unionist parties, of course, which supported and justified the killings on Bloody Sunday, for example, there was no sign there that unionists were prepared to engage. And it took a long, long time, and that those people were demonised, people refused to talk. I mean, the irony of it was, Gerry Adams, when he had no mandate, was flown to London to speak to the Secretary of State, William Whitelaw, at Cheney Walk in July 1972. Then when he had a mandate, he was banned from entering Britain, a ban from broadcasting, and no ministers would speak to him. So, you know, we were told again during the hunger strike, the prisoners have no support. Bobby Sands run for election, got elected. The reaction of Margaret Thatcher was not to negotiate and perhaps not just save hunger strikers' lives, but those on the outside who would also be killed in collateral violence on the streets. She changed the law so that no prisoner could stand for election. So we've had, you know, look at it in the round.
But in the round.
Of course, I regret the conflict.
I mean, these are big, big political context issues. But Hugh's brother was murdered in 1972 and his two friends were murdered with him. And when Hugh looks at this, he's not thinking of those big context issues. He's looking at
personally
people whose lives were erased unnecessarily.
That's right. And there's nothing that I can do about that. You can't bring back the dead. But they're dead on all sides. And what generated the IRA, in my opinion, was the early violence of the RUC and the British Army. And then, of course, something that the IRA did then provoked the Loyalists, something that the Loyalists did provoked the IRA.
Did the bombing achieve anything, Danny?
There were options to sharing power in 1974, yeah. Sunningdale.
But 72,
well,
the bombing...
Well, actual fact, there's massive differences between Sunningdale and the Good Friday Agreement. Under Sunningdale, we still had the Special Branch, we still had the RUC, we still had the UDR. They still had all those special repressive laws, at least as a result of the Good Friday Agreement. The place where I live now is not the state that I grew up in. So when Malachy says to me, did these things achieve anything? I would say, yes, they did, at an extremely high cost, and I wish it hadn't happened. And I also wish that the likes of you would reflect exactly the feelings on the ground in places like West Belfast, where I live, where I grew up, and where you were born.
Before you come back, Malachy, Hugh, you've been listening to that. What's your response?
Donnie, you had cohorts who was in that. you're not coming clean. You're chipping away and chipping away. And I feel sorry for not just my brother, but for all my religions and the other people on my, who were killed, blown up, innocent people who are still, I'm sure, like myself, worrying, crying and crying over, like, your friend Jerry Adams denies this and denies that, and your friends, and yous are chipping away and trying to chip us and chip us and chip us. We have done our best, but yous will never do your best. Yous will never come clean. Yous want everything. Everything yous want. You just want to tramp us all over the ground.
Well, that's not true. That's just not true. And I can understand the man because of the position he's coming from, having lost a loved one. But there are people on the Nicholas side also who lost loved ones very early on in the Troubles, before a shot was fired from the Republican side. People were killed on the streets, people were battened, people were shot dead. 9-year-old Patrick Rooney in bed in Divis Flats, killed by the RUC. Now, when you say to come clean, when is the state going to come clean? We don't know. And even when Sir Arthur Young from the Metropolitan Police came over here to investigate early killings by the RUC, he met with, quote, a conspiracy of silence. So you can see, Hugh, that it's not just one side that has been involved in this.
Thank you, Hugh, for your call. 08459 555 678 for your calls if you want to join the conversation as well. Some of your texts on 81771. Nigel in Belfast, good on you, Malachy. The self-appointed murdering vigilantes on either side cannot face the truth. They actually see themselves as heroes. Thank God that someone has had at least the courage to be totally honest and state what so many of us know to be the truth. Maybe now more people will accept this truth and show courage, not hide behind the myth that we are all guilty. And a unionist from Rathcoole, as he describes himself, says, Malachy, total truth.
Well, yes, thank you very much. It's, you know, it's an honour to get compliments.
We will read other texts, you know, when they come in, yeah, with other positions.
And I mean, in some ways, you know, it feels strange to be saying all this stuff again and going over old ground. But the importance of saying it is because we have a dissident campaign and we have the potential of unrest in other areas as well. And what the message from the thing that Sinn Féin could contribute to peacemaking and prolonged peacemaking is to say now, look, we were wrong. We made the wrong call. The war, the long war, was the wrong war. It was all a mistake. We're sorry. Don't even say we're sorry. Just say to the dissidents.
And you think that would make dissidents go
just
away?
Just say to the dissidents, it didn't work for us and it won't work for you.
And you think that would make them go
away?
Well,
I don't know, but it would be a strong moral argument against the dissidents to say, if what we have at present is Danny and others saying, it did work for us, it got us something. Well, you know, if I was a young dissident in Derry, I might be saying to myself, well, Danny Morrison gave up early. I think we should we'd keep at it. You know, what Danny Morrison should say to them is, we were wrong. We only got anywhere when we...
They would see that as an even greater betrayal.
But it's a reality. They only got anywhere politically when they moved on to the ground of the majority of nationalists who did not want violence and who were not Republicans.
He wants them to adopt his biography and all of this.
There you
are.
My biography.
Yes.
What's that,
well,
you know?
Well, because the fact of the matter is that the largest party representing the nicest community is Sinn Féin.
Yes. Well done, guys.
Is Sinn Féin.
Don't shut him down. Let him talk.
And increasingly so in the south of Ireland. You see, people would attempt to do this again, and there's revisionists attempting to do this about the Tan War, the War of Independence, that it was all for nothing, it could have been achieved. You've got Kevin Mayer saying, oh, you could have achieved it all without Easter Sunday, without the Tan War. The fact of the matter is the British government didn't move towards making concessions until there was force and the threat of force used against it. Now, if you're a pacifist, certainly that...
Kevin Myers either.
Right?
Do I look like Kevin Myers?
You know... Mr. Moore is on the phone. Good morning, Mr. Moore.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I just want, if you just rewind the tape a bit, there was no IRA in 69. I dare say that the shootings and bombings was done by the UVF. And as I say, before 69, there must have been educated people here who saw what was going on, what way people weren't getting their house, their rights. So why had it to take ordinary people in the street to come out on the street and protest? You know what I mean? It just blew up in their faces. I blame the British government, who let the unionists get away with all this here, sectarianism and housing, and what have you, gerrymandering. So it's pretty up in their face. And they're talking about the peace process and this here. It's only a lull. It'll happen again.
Thanks very much, Mr. Moore.
While Britain's here, it'll always be trouble here.
Well, when you say when Britain's here, you mean when people who consider themselves British?
Pardon?
When you say when Britain's here, do you mean people who consider themselves British?
People can consider themselves British all they want, but people in Ireland should be ruling themselves. Their guarantee of their Britishness will be guaranteed in a new constitution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moore. Brian, I think Brian's a councillor from Twinbrook, isn't that right?
Yep.
Brian, good morning to you.
Morning.
Which party are you with, Brian? Sorry, I don't have that information.
I'm with the SDLP.
SDLP councillor from Twinbrook. Go ahead.
It was just when Danny was talking about there, and let me say from the outset, you know, we need honesty and clarity about these things. But when he was talking about the delegation that was sent to London and flown there by an RAF jet, from what I recall, I can't remember whether it was a Sinn Féin delegation went over or was it a delegation from some other organisation. So it'd be interesting hearing for Danny to remind me exactly what the delegation was.
We're nearly out of time. News is approaching, but give us a response to that, Danny.
The delegation representing the Republican movement.
Does that answer your question, Brian?
And who gave them the mandate within the Republican movement to do that?
Well, I mean, you could say who gave John Hume the mandate to go out protesting
the
Civil Rights March.
Hold on a minute, Danny. Honesty and clarity. Who gave them the mandate to go off and negotiate a ceasefire in London and be flown there with a British jet?
Brian, I can help you out here because I've seen the documents of Philip Woodfield, the diplomat who met Gerry Adams and Dahi O'Connell and Donegal, and his clear understanding is that he was talking to the IRA.
Well, enough said then.
Oh.
Was he talking to the IRA? Was he talking to the Republican movement?
Of the Republican movement. I'm not going to say anything which is going to incriminate or implicate anybody. People are still, there's still people in jail. Gerry McGeoch, for something that happened 30 years ago, is currently in jail. So I'm not going to say anything. I speak for myself, and I stand over anything I say.
But I think it's hard for Danny and Gerry and others that they are hung up on that pretense, you know. There's no need
pretense
for it anymore.
I'm hung up
on the pretense that Gerry Adams wasn't in the IRA.
Well, one is rewriting history.
Yeah.
We're not sure which one it is. But you're both making that allegation of the other.